Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Corey Lofi, alongside our friend, Mr. Arbor Joe Aitken, here for another compelling conversation about trees. Joe, summer is on. The heat is on. It's still wet here in the West, but the heat is on and it's coming, and we're just going to smile through it. How are you holding up? How are things back in Michigan?
You know, it's kind of the same, Corey. Like I said, this spring was kind of, like I said, we talked about it a few months back. You know, it was the perfect storm for needle and leaf disease. And now we're starting to see it pop up pretty bad. So it's going to kind of tie in what we're talking about today. But a lot of guys are behind. They're trying to get out there and get caught up. I had to believe it or not, I had a good friend of mine that has a pretty good sized company, and he told me today that he's $150,000 behind.
Oh,
behind. Yeah. Not enough applicators, got caught by the rain in the spring, you know, and the bad thing is that you get to a certain point, you can't continue to do the services because they're no longer viable.
Yeah, you missed those treatment windows.
Yeah, so, you know, can you imagine being that far off on your plant health care? You know, I feel for it. But every year, Mother Nature throws curveballs, and you got to roll with it, and there's peaks and valleys in this industry.
Peaks and valleys for sure.
That's why you got to keep your stuff ready. Have the equipment. Have the positive, great equipment to get up there and go, which kind of leads us into a great conversation tonight. I'm excited about it. I don't think we've discussed anything like this yet. So it'll be fun. So I'm going to throw it back to you, Corey, and let you introduce our guest tonight. And let's kick it off.
Yeah, let's have fun with this topic. I think Joe and I, and there are a handful of other manufacturer reps out there, that go around and we meet with dozens of new startup companies, you know, a couple hundred, maybe even thousands of companies that are currently doing spray or chemical applications. And almost everybody has the same questions. And we thought, instead of having that same conversation 500 times, let's bring in a professional. Let's bring in somebody who does this for a living. Let's have our friend answer some of the questions, and we'll kind of go from there. So, out of my local market in the Front Range of Colorado, Arvada to be specific, we have Scott joining us from Professional Tree and Turf Equipment. For anybody who's ever in the Denver area, working in the Denver area, or just wants a little bit more insight into what we're doing, Scott and Pro Tree and Turf, they're such a great resource. So without any further ado, Scott, welcome to the program. How are you doing this spring?
We're doing great. I'm doing great. Excited to be here. Thanks for having me on, you guys.
Shoot, no problem. You might not say that at the end, but I'm glad you said it now.
Yeah, we'll get it out of the way early and see if we have regrets later.
No regrets.
No regrets here, Scott. But how did you get into the industry, Scott? What's your background? How did you just walk into sprayers one day? How'd you get here?
Not terribly far away from that, Corey. You know, I view it as somewhat providentially and incredibly grateful to be where I'm at. I met the prior owner of the company, Craig, a number of years ago through a different line of business when I was in what you might call industrial distribution, working for another company in the sales and business development arena. And he and I did some business together then and stayed in touch because we had similar interests in the outdoors. And lo and behold, a number of years later, he started recruiting me to come to work for him. And after a lot of thought and a lot of conversations, I was ready for a new adventure and, came on board here in mid-2020, right in the heart of COVID. Decided, why not make a career change? And, landed here because it just felt like the right thing, the right place to be with the right people.
And can you tell the listeners, what do you do at Professional Tree and Turf Equipment?
Yeah, so we build spraying equipment for tree care, lawn care, weed control, plant health care spraying equipment. Most of it is customized to the user's specific needs. We got a lot of standards we build off of, but we tweak everything to the specific needs of that customer.
I think you said Craig was the previous owner.
Yeah.
Started what, 30 something years ago, early 90s.
Yes, well, started really in the early 80s with a gentleman who owned the company before Craig, who he had started out in the lawn care industry. Guy, first name is Steve. He actually still lives about a mile down the road from our shop today, and I know him personally.
Awesome.
So another reason why I feel so grateful to be here is that we've got such deep roots, no pun intended, that the two previous owners we're still in close touch with. And they're here to help us continue to serve our customers. So we've got knowledge going back decades and building spraying equipment.
That's a good indicator of the quality of people that even after all this time, they're still involved. So kudos to you guys. That's awesome.
Yeah, I can't say enough about the quality of people that I'm fortunate to be tied in here with. It was really one of the biggest things that got me excited to come on board here and then eventually take over for Craig as he transitions out to retirement.
So what I think, when Corey and I were discussing, having you on and talking about this industry, I'm thinking my first third is like, how many people need sprayers? Geez, how many times you buy these? How can anybody be busy building sprayers? But, talking before we're recording, you guys are swamped. Now, is that an indicator that the business is growing or equipment is wearing out? I'm just trying to kind of beat up on you a little bit, but how many sprayers do you sell a year if you had an average?
New sprayers we sell a year 50 to 100.
Really?
Yeah,
And
and they
most of them are
range from
custom?
all sizes and all types. Might be a little 50-gallon tank and a little 12-volt pump, all the way up to a custom-built truck with an 800-gallon tank and two different pumps on it. So it varies greatly
That's amazing.
on what we do. And each there are standards, but each customer goes through a process where we help them select the right pieces to get them the equipment that's going to perform the work that they need to do. Because not everybody is spraying the same stuff. Some people focus on small trees because they're in an urban area and they don't want to spray way up high because you got drift and you got stuff carrying over into places you don't want it to go. You got other people out in the rural areas, and spraying big is the name of the game, and it's okay, because it's rural.
Now, can I ask, how do you approach setting somebody up and kind of tailoring the perfect spray setup to them? Are there a lot of big differences between like a turf outfit and a tree outfit, or is there some overlap? I guess it depends on the end user, but any trends that you're seeing?
The biggest difference is the size of the pump and or engine. If the pump's powered by a pony motor, the tree folks have bigger pumps and engines because they need more flow and pressure to go higher. The folks doing turf work don't need a whole lot because it's just all going right on the ground. So that's the major difference there. And some people do a little bit of both, so they need the versatility.
I think, there's a lot of smaller guys that are out applying and they need one tank that can do everything and the quick connects and they got to be able to switch from an insecticide to a fungicide to a fertilizer all in one tank. And I know a lot of guys that do that. It's kind of a pain in the butt.
Yeah, but if
Yeah,
you
if you're
just starting
careful
out,
about it, if you're careful about it and you know how to clean things in between tanks, there's guys who do that very well and very efficiently. And some people don't want to necessarily worry about it because maybe they're more than a one-person show and they'll have a couple of tanks. But yeah, you're right. There's a lot of one person shows, just one guy out there with his truck and he's got one tank, and they do very well with that. And they know how to take care of it so they don't cross contaminate stuff and cause damage.
That's a good point. If you time things out correctly, depending on where you are, you could start out with your fertilizer, then your systemic insecticide and fertilizer. Then you could move into your fungicide sprays and so on and so forth. And I think a trend that we're seeing here in the West, Joe, I don't know, you probably don't see it as much in the Midwest or out East, is people are using this equipment that Scott is building for people and doing maintenance on. They're doing it year round because they're doing winter waterings and, winter soil conditioning applications. So it's pretty fun to see out here.
I can see that. I get, like I said, I'm just thinking, custom built. You gotta have, there's obviously, it's got their standard models, but there's always something. Like I said, I was thinking, I know we were talking before the recording that I had something for you, because I use the truck and I have a sprayer for work to use with some of my demos when I'm doing a certain demonstration. The biggest pain in the butt for me is getting it in and out of the back of the truck. So I was thinking, how a stretcher goes in the back of an ambulance and the legs just kind of fold out when you pull it out?
Oh yeah.
Could you do that to a rig, spray rig?
We could, and we actually have.
Get out. What?
No, we've done a few. So spraying equipment also rolls into, some of the folks out there in the wintertime, they're doing snow and ice control as a supplementary business. So we have some sprayers that are geared towards using mag chloride and salt brines. But we have a design for one of those where it's got legs that fold down, and then you drive the truck out and you fold down the other set of legs as it goes. And it helps. It really does.
Me like a camper?
Yeah,
So
I think.
how campers have the outside legs that you crank down and you just pull out from underneath it?
Yeah, the ones that we've done is just a simple hinge. It just, flips down. But yeah, you could add on some sort of mechanical leverage with something that will crank up and down as well. That could certainly be done. But that's a really good idea, Joe, because just like you said, not everybody has a skid steer to lift things in and out of the bed of their truck. And if it's, more than 100 to 200 pounds, one guy, maybe they can, but they probably shouldn't be managing it by themselves.
Yeah. You get found it laying underneath it, your arms and legs sticking off from underneath it.
Yeah.
And the bad thing is that, again, we talk about timing your sprays right, and you got to get it out of the truck because you need it for something else, and you got 50 gallons left in there. You got to go find a way to get rid of it before you can pull it out of the back of the truck. But if you had a way to get that out.
Well, and Joe, you brought up a really good point right there. You just said if you have like 50 gallons left at the end of your route, kind of one of the things that I'm thinking about is you have to plan ahead, right? How many jobs are you going to do? How much volume is going to be required? What's the timing for it? But here's another big question that I think a lot of people, especially they're just getting into it, is how do you calibrate a sprayer? Can we even discuss how to calibrate a sprayer? Here on the radio wave, Scott.
We could, but I'll be honest with you, that's an area I'm still developing some expertise in.
Sure.
I can tell you what customers have shared with me from calibration, but I can't get terribly technical with it at this point. And part of that ties back to you guys know a lot more about how to mix your chemicals, and that's not an area where we really focus on. We focus on the equipment. But some guys are doing things as simple as timing the flow out of their pump into a 5 gallon bucket to calibrate it.
Yes, that is
Yeah.
all you need to do, people.
But you know
Some
what? Then you
people.
got soil resistance. I know that we used to count from 3 to 5 seconds once you got into the soil with a soil probe. But that works. But when you start doing foliar applications,
Oh, yeah.
it's a lot harder to gather X amount of gallons per thousand square feet if you're not, if you don't have a way to tally that?
That's a good point.
So I know there's
people that'll add flow meters. There's some little flow meters you can get that will screw right onto your hose at your gun or your root feeder tool. And you can measure the number of gallons that are going through that. So there are some tools available for that on the marketplace.
Yeah. I don't know much out of them. I know there's some out there. I've never, in all my years, never had the pleasure of having a rig, spray rig, or a sprayer that ever had a flow meter on it. I would be like, what is that?
Well, yeah, most people don't, but there's a handful that do, and they know how to use them, and they use that to calibrate exactly what they're applying into the ground or onto the tree.
Well, you got to think, if it's just hydraulics, how can they? Now, gas pumps are probably operated the same way. You got a fluid, you got a pump, you got a nozzle. Man, they're right down to the, man, you want to talk about being exact. It's got to be something like that for a spray rig.
Yeah,
no, yeah, that's, there are.
Well, but here's the other thing is how exact, you know, if you're doing an application with like a plant growth regulator, and this is maybe where Joe and I are getting at, you have to be accurate to like the milliliter or the 10 milliliter chunk. But for most people, just doing a soil deep root fertilizer, or maybe a imidacloprid, something super cheap, you could be, you know, half a gallon off here and there. But that is a good thought, Joe. I guess I never really considered how much product people could be wasting or using or more accurately dosed out if they had something.
Like I would that. Be more concerned about not enough.
Yeah,
not you know, enough both product. Ways. It goes both ways. So
yeah, sure.
I think you're right, Scott. I think it would be depend on the applicator's desire to be as precise as they want to, and there are probably are bolt-on things or something they can add to that unit.
Yeah, you're right. There are. There's some people will have chemical injection systems and meters, so to speak, that are injecting chemical right into the flow of water, which then, you know, comes out the end of your gun. So there are systems that get pretty precise. And there's some folks out there that have figured that out pretty well.
Yeah, I've seen that on a herbicide application where the tank is water and there's a hopper, like a 50-gallon hopper tank that is a two-line hose. It actually mixes by the gun. It's pretty sweet. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Those are pretty sweet. I have seen some of those, and it's a really, really great system for being precise and for applying the right amount of product.
Yeah, like I said, you got to be careful with it, especially with a herbicide or something like a plant growth regulator, like you said, Corey, over-regulate something because, whoops, a butterfly went by and you stopped counting. Next thing you know, you put too much in the ground and the tree tanks. Not a good thing.
No, and let's keep going down that conversation, you know, kind of as it relates to kind of custom or more specifics with spray rigs. Something I didn't know, I didn't realize with spray rigs until I actually got out to the west, to the mountains, was when you come up in elevation, the same spray rig that they build in Florida or Michigan or Maine, it's not necessarily going to put out that same volume once you get to elevation. And then, of course, when you do change the hose length, the friction, the inside friction of that hose will also dictate how much product comes out, how fast. So, Scott, what are some of the questions or what are some of the considerations that you have for people? Because I know you're building rigs for people, not just in Colorado, but probably Nebraska, Utah, Idaho. What are some considerations that you have for people?
You know, Corey, you bring up a great point where elevation does influence things. And the big influence is how the motor performs that's running your pump. And for folks at elevation, you can change some of the internals of your motor to allow that to perform more efficiently at elevation, so you get closer to the same amount of power that you would at a lower elevation. So that's an influential factor. If we're building something and sending it to a lower elevation, there's not really any appreciable difference in performance, because it's going to an environment where that engine's not going to struggle to perform.
Sure.
But your other point, the hoses and the fittings, every piece of that system from the bulkhead at the tank where the pump starts sucking water all the way to the very nozzle of your gun has an influence on the performance of the sprayer. And figuring a lot of that out, I don't take much or really any credit for it personally. It's a lot of years of experience of us, of the vendors and manufacturers we work with, the folks who make the pumps and the folks who make the guns and the other items. And we kind of bring all that together into a system that's going to meet the customer's needs. So it really starts with, what kind of work do you want to do with this sprayer, Mr. Customer? And we work backwards from there to figure out the right parts and pieces so that they can be successful serving their customers.
I like it. I like it. Now, we talked earlier about obviously there's so many variables in the size of tank that you can custom build. How much that, if from a, like you said, looks like a truck mounted, van mounted, a slide in pickup to a trailer mounted. Now we know that we could build bigger, but I wanted to ask your experience. I feel that the industry is trending toward ultra low volume. So, and I bring that up too because I think we're trying to get away from the bulk applications that we've done for the last 100 years. Have you seen anything, any trending or any questions to you about applying less in having a smaller tank in the back of the truck? So you don't have to have 300 gallons. You could run a route with 50 gallons. Are you seeing anything like that?
Yes, I am. And it's not necessarily that they're carrying less volume altogether. The folks that are wanting to use less product are usually still carrying a couple hundred gallons of water or more. And then they have a smaller tank where they're doing a custom mix for either a group of jobs or even sometimes one job at a time. So they might have, a medium to larger tank with a smaller tank of, maybe 50 gallons, and they'll put some water into that 50-gallon tank. They'll add whatever additional product they need. They'll apply it to the customer, or maybe they have a group of customers in an area that are affected by the same thing. And then they'll move on to the next spot, where they may have a different mix they put into that smaller tank, and they'll keep feeding it with the water from the bigger tank, so they don't have to stop to refill in the middle of the day, and that allows
Using a
them to
nurse
be
tank.
efficient. So if they have the capacity to carry the water weight, most of them will carry a little extra water and mix. But your point is very true. People are looking to use less product and use it specifically where it's needed after they diagnose the issue.
Yeah, because I'll tell you right now, back when I started spraying trees and fertilizing, we had these big Ford 800s, these big, huge trucks, 1,000 gallon bean sprayers. And there was days where we had to come back and refill those.
Wow.
And one of my first jobs is that the owner, when he bid jobs, bid by the gallon. That's a 500 gallon job. And if I come back into the yard with that 1,000 gallon tank with any product in it, he felt I ripped people off. They're like, man, Chuck, if I spray to the point of runoff and it's done, what do you want me to do? Just dump it on the ground in the property's front yard? But you don't see rigs like that on the road anymore. So I think the industry is scaling back. I do like the nurse tank if you can carry that extra weight, but.
Well, I'm wondering if another trend, this is kind of interesting because it made the news. They were talking about like two stroke motors, and they were talking about even just like your a regular gas lawnmower or weed whip or chainsaw. And I'm thinking, man, I wonder if Pro Tree and Turf is starting to see more demand for, maybe it's just in California, but starting to see more demand for an electric based or maybe a PTO based spray setup. Scott, is that anything like that coming across, or you think that's going to trickle down if the bills get passed?
That is a trend that's picking up, Corey, as well. You're very keen to observe that. There are, you know, California's led the way with laws limiting or eliminating small engines. Colorado has entertained a bill to do the same. It did not pass here in Colorado. And I can only imagine there's other states across the country entertaining those regulations. So we are seeing an uptick in interest in all electric systems. Not as much for the PTO driven systems, because I believe that the people who are interested in being ahead of the curve on that realize if they're driving it off a PTO, their truck is still running and they're still putting exhaust out there through their truck.
Right.
Because if you're running off the PTO, that's the necessary thing. So there is an uptick in interest in electric systems. The limits right now are primarily how much battery power you can get to feed an electric motor to power a pump. So there are some technological limitations there, but we've had enough interest where it's something we're looking into, we're starting to experiment with, and there's a local municipality we're doing an all-electric watering truck for. So oh, being in cool. The West here, very dry climate, watering is a big deal throughout the summer and fall and even into the winter. There's a local municipality that we found a local partner to develop a battery bank and power management system to feed a 10-gallon a minute electric pump. And that's how they're going to do their watering off of I think it's a 700 or 800 gallon tank.
Well, you know, but it, Corey, backpack sprayers are already going electric. You know, they're battery operated. There's some good ones out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I attended the Equipment Expo in Louisville, Kentucky last fall. And everybody was a huge trend on electric. Mm. Now, Milwaukee coming out with electric chainsaws and DeWalt and everybody. And DeWalt had a an electric zero-turn mower out in the demo area. And it was good looking. It was sweet. DeWalt colors, like a DeWalt racing electric lawnmower.
Oh, cool.
That baby caught fire. So then the fire department shows up because it was smoldering, and they didn't realize that you can't put water on an ICAD battery, and it blew up. So everybody took pictures of this roasted DeWalt lawnmower, and they got teased for it. But I think we'd be fooling ourselves if we didn't realize that a lot of this stuff, even our little tank sprayer in the back of our pickup truck is going to go electric sooner or later.
It is well intended, right? Something that's a little bit more sustainable, a little better on the environment, less of a carbon footprint, maybe less noise, all of that. So yeah. Scott, as we're kind of wrapping up today's conversation, we haven't had nearly enough time to fire all the questions at you that Joe and I have been preparing, but what advice would you give to somebody who's either looking to build a spray rig, or maybe they have a spray setup and they just need to maintain it better? What kind of advice do you want to give to people out there? This is your chance to really make that big difference.
Well, I think there's enough options out there, and this goes beyond what we can offer at Professional Tree and Turf Equipment, that you don't have to settle. I think you can get what you want in a spray rig, and it doesn't have to come from us. There's a handful of us scattered around the country, somehow strategically, where we don't step on each other's toes too much, which is a wonderful thing, that you can find a partner to help consult with you through the process to get the spray rig that's going to perform so you can take care of your customers. That's ultimately what matters at the end of the day, is taking care of our customers. And if you guys are able to do that with the spraying equipment you've got, everybody wins. So don't settle. for what you've got. If it's not working right, there's options.
I think that's great words, but I can't let you go, Scott, yet, because I read in your bio that you're a Laker. You graduated from
Yes,
Lake
sir.
Superior State University in Sault Ste. Marie. Are you from Michigan?
Yes, sir. I am a Michigander, born and raised in Genesee County, Fenton, Michigan.
That's awesome. One of the best gun and knife stores in Michigan is in Fenton.
Guns galore.
Yeah, guns galore.
I remember growing up driving by their sign. It was like the word guns 10 times, and on the bottom of it was galore.
Yep, right on I-75.
Yep. Oh,
That's
yeah.
awesome.
That's great. Small world.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. And then you ended up out in Colorado. A little bit of a difference, but I'm glad you're doing well out there. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to jump on with Corey and I and talk about, I'm not going to say it's not the most glamorous topic like climbing the biggest tree or not like that. But this is an important topic of being efficient in your day-to-day routine. And more people are getting into plant healthcare and tree preservation. And we definitely need more guys like you and your company out there serving us. So thank you very much.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys. Really enjoyed it tonight.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.